Welcome to Side Hustle City, and thanks for joining us. Our goal is to help you connect to real people who found success turning their side hustle into a main hustle, and we hope you can too. I'm Adam Kaler. I'm joined by Kyle Stevie, my co-host. Let's get started. All right, welcome back, everybody. Another Side Hustle City podcast, and this time, my trusty co-host Kyle Stevie is out of town. He's on a beach somewhere.
Bruh. That's how you say it when you live on the beach. It's bruh.
Bruh. So where are you at, Kyle?
I am right off of Isle of Palms near Charleston.
Okay. Could be worse.
Could be.
Yeah. So today, we are joined by Brandon Ponchak. How you doing, Brandon?
Good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. And it sounds like from our little intro that Kyle gave me earlier, you're a side hustler. Were you a side hustler before the term side hustle came out?
I've kind of always dabbled a little bit in kind of entrepreneurial stuff and just enjoy, you know, providing, doing other things, you know, like keep myself busy. I don't really have a hobby. So I guess the side hustle is my hobby.
Interesting. What got you into wanting to do side hustles? I mean, did you work regular jobs and then you just kind of like jumped into side hustling, or how'd that work for you?
Yeah, so I guess it probably started when I was in college or right around that time where, and it actually was a soccer league where I'd go home from college. I'm from southeastern Ohio originally, and there was never a place to play soccer. So me and a friend that was a local high school coach, we started a soccer league just to provide an opportunity for some adults to play soccer. And that kind of got me going a little bit more. And I guess you could say maybe in high school I did it, because what high school boy doesn't mow the lawns for a summer, just about. And that was kind of what I did then. So ever since then, it's just always been something else. If I could get interested in something, then let's give it a try.
Interesting. Okay. So talk a little bit about this. So Kyle told me that you just created this crazy popular sports league out of just kind of thin air. And I guess it all stemmed from the fact that you didn't have anywhere to play soccer.
Well, not me anymore. I'm past that time of playing competitively, really, you know, like, but so I had a full-time job and working in, you know, it's called USL League 2, which is, you know, the highest level of amateur soccer in the United States, you know, the top pre-professional league, what it's often called. And what I found out when I moved to Cincinnati in 2017 was there's just not enough opportunities for young players to continue playing. I mean, I was a college coach for 8 years before that. Before moving to Cincinnati, and always wanted my players to play somewhere, to stay sharp, to get more games, because that 16 to 23 plus age group is often forgot about. There's not enough opportunities for them. If they don't get a college scholarship, then they're done playing, essentially. And, you know, at 18 years old, your career should never be done. I don't care what sport it is. I don't care what activity. I mean, maybe if you're in band, you know, you should always have an opportunity to play an instrument. Whatever it is, there needs to be that opportunity. And for me, all I know is soccer. So a buddy of mine out of Indianapolis named Jason Brown, he had a team in a league that folded. The league actually folded midseason. And this was in 2017. So we got talking, saying, hey, what can we do to provide more for this region? We call it the Ohio Valley region because we're, you know, all kind of off the Ohio Valley or the Ohio River. And we just got talking for, you know, essentially 2 years. And we were able to get four teams together to create a league. And then that was in 2019. We went public with it. 2020 was supposed to be the first year. And unfortunately, we had the pandemic, right? And we had 12 men's teams committed, and we had what was the first year for women? I think we had 5 or 6 women's teams committed. And then now in 2021, we're going to hit it pretty hard this summer, and we have 20 men's teams and 11 women's teams right now.
Oh, wow. Wow. And yeah, how many cities did you say you were in?
So we are stretched from Evansville, Indiana to the west to Pittsburgh in the east on the men's side. And then the women's side, we go to West Virginia, a little farther east than what Pittsburgh is. We actually have a men's team in Wheeling, West Virginia as well.
Yeah.
But the women's team's farther east than Wheeling. So we basically have 5 states: Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania.
I used to drive through Wheeling on my way to Pittsburgh because I went to school in Pittsburgh. And yeah, you go through Wheeling, and in the winter they've got this really cool like winter ice display and all kinds of cool stuff. It's like a little winter wonderland over in Wheeling, West Virginia. Nobody really knows about it.
And they've grown so much. I mean, I remember driving through there as well. And then once they put in, you know, the big outdoor store, right?
Cabela's.
I mean, that whole area just boomed. And it's a really hot headquarters spot now.
I think their headquarters is out there, isn't it? The Cabela headquarters. I think it's either in Pennsylvania or it's in West Virginia somewhere. But it's over that way. I believe it's the world headquarters.
So it's just a ripe area to be a good proximity from Columbus to Pittsburgh, even Cleveland, right off the interstate, you know, easy access to I-77 as well. And they got a couple schools right close. I mean, right in Wheeling, basically. But they also have probably 10 schools, universities, in a probably hour and a half radius.
Oh, yeah. Not very far. Yeah. I mean, do you see everybody super competitive since, you know, Pittsburgh and Cincinnati kind of hate each other because of the Bengals and Steelers rivalry? Do you have that same thing in soccer? Is that it, like when people from Cincinnati roll to Pittsburgh to play a game, or do they ever play each other, or is it just like inner city kind of games?
Matches? So the way it's basically operated is we give the teams good ownership capabilities in terms of this is your league to help make decisions in. Because what we don't want to be is we don't want to be authoritative and just have this ruling fist over everything. It's built around community rivalries is what we want. Every, like abroad, every single country has teams in every corner, basically. Every community has a team to support. And you support your local team, but you also may have a big team that you support, like a Manchester United.
Yeah, when I was in London, it was like there was every neighborhood had a freaking team. And it was like, how are there this many teams? Like, it was crazy.
Correct. And we should have that here. And that's what we're essentially trying to say. Hey, we already have that, really, right? You know, in these 3 states, we actually just started with Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky. In these 3 states, there's over 30,000 kids playing high school soccer.
Wow.
And in Kentucky alone, there's only 2,500 registered adults playing soccer.
Wow. Okay. That's kind
of... And Indiana's about the same. You know, so like the numbers after high school drop way off.
I was going to say, there's a huge discrepancy. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Wow. How do you go from that 30,000 down to 2,500, you know?
Right. Right. So
they're all playing pickup club stuff. They don't have anything formal. They don't have a actual league where... I don't know. A lot of those guys are still that hope, right? That they're going to somebody's going to see them at the next game, and that's going to be the way that they get onto a USL1 roster or a US. You know, the dream is still there for a lot of those guys.
Yeah,
which is
absolutely
the way you want it.
What's this thing that they're building up in Hamilton, Ohio? Isn't it like some kind of huge facility where people come from all over the country and have tournaments? Have you heard about this thing?
Only one I know of is what is it, Warren County Sports, the what do they call it, the largest playground in the U.S. or something?
Yeah, maybe. I think this thing actually started in Pittsburgh, believe it or not. Let me look it up real quick. Hamilton, Ohio Sports Complex. Yeah, because it's crazy because people are buying property up there right now. Like it's supposed to bring Spooky Nook Sports Complex is what it's called. Spooky Nook. You ought to check it out. Like, apparently, like, people come from all over the country or they're going, they come from all over the country to go to these places. They just build these like giant warehouses, and they've got like multiple soccer fields. They've got all kinds of stuff. I mean, they have gymnastics tournaments there and everything. Yeah. Spooky Nook Champion Mill Fly Through. They've got this whole thing. Yeah. It's called the, yeah, Spooky Nook Sports Champion Mill Project in Hamilton, Ohio.
Are they building like regulation size field? Cause there's a place up in Fishers, Indiana, or somewhere in Indianapolis where they have regulation size indoor fields in this at the Grand Park. And it's like three soccer fields inside of this steel frame building. It's pretty enormous.
This is kind of what it is. It says the Spooky Nook Sports Champion Mill Redevelopment Project is a $165 million investment in the former Champion Paper Mill location in the heart of downtown Hamilton. So it's a Spooky Nook is developing a 1 million square foot sports, entertainment, and event complex on the west shore of the Great Miami River. That's enough. That's enough space for a couple soccer fields there, isn't it? Million square feet.
I have no idea.
Yeah,
I would hope so.
Yeah, that's pretty big. It's like an Amazon warehouse. Yeah. So yeah, you might want to look into that. Then maybe that's an opportunity for your league to have a place to play.
Maybe I just need to build one too, right?
Yeah, or you just find $128 million and crowdfund it. Why not? See what happens. Yeah, but this is I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, I've got family up in Hamilton, and a couple of them have houses close to where this thing's going in, and then all of a sudden the city of Hamilton outlaws Airbnb because he was like, "Wow, my sister or my wife's brother, he's got a house really like essentially across the river from this thing," and he's like, "Oh man, I can make a fortune." Then they outlawed Airbnb or something. They added some weird laws worse than what Covington did to us. So I don't know. Yeah.
If they aren't cheating, they aren't trying. You just got to tell them to stay quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if there's money to be made, the government will figure out a way to take it from you. So don't worry.
Brandon, if you haven't noticed yet, this is a very like conversational style podcast. Absolutely. And we meander off into the weeds pretty frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all about it.
Yeah, we're all kind of like libertarian, like leave me alone and let me have my money. So hey man, maybe there's an opportunity here. I don't know, or yeah, maybe this sparks something for you and you say, hey man, maybe I'll build my own thing. I'll go out and get $100 million. So is that your main thing, is like managing this and manning this league, or are there other things out there that you're doing on top of this to kind of make money?
Yeah, so I currently am back in USL2. I kind of got a lucked into it, fortunate to have King's Hammer. They started a USL2 team in February. It was announced, I believe, and I was able to jump on board. Got the same head coach that we worked with previously in Paul Nicholson. So I kind of do the soccer operation side of the USL2 team. And then I got into the, I mean, I was a goalkeeper growing up. Started kind of in high school is where I focused on it, but I've always wanted some gloves, my own kind of brand, or just to distribute, to sell. So I was able to jump on board and grab a goalkeeper glove company called S1 Goalkeeping, which is an English company, but I have the US kind of locked down with nice. With the company. So it's been fun. I mean, really what I do it for is I want to save goalkeepers, young goalkeepers, all goalkeepers money, but still give them a great product. Growing up, I was like, oh, I need to have this pair of gloves. It's the only pair of gloves that's worth anything. And it's $150, where it doesn't need to be that. There's great gloves out there that are not $150. And we're one of them, S1 Goalkeeping. And it's just been great. Like I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed saving people money. And just, selling gloves. I think in the first, this is year two for me, essentially. I started in 2019, and I think I've sold gloves in about 25 states so far.
Wow.
And then Canada as well.
So how does that work? How do you get connected with that company to even do that? Like, I'm sure a bunch of people are listening right now and they're like, oh, wow, that sounds like a cool thing. Cause you got an established product in Europe. You're just bringing it over to the United States and reselling it. But how does that work? How do you build that relationship and get that going?
So that was a lucky thing as well, I guess, a bit. One of my former goalkeepers, Zeus, is his name, Zeus De La Paz.
Love it.
That it might be the best name that will be mentioned on this podcast.
Pretty sweet.
He was actually in a naming contest, and he lost out to a teammate of his. I forget what his teammate's name was, but it was a legit name as well. But Zeus was a great goalkeeper for us here in Cincinnati. He represents Curaçao national team as well. He was with Oldham Athletic in the England League One at the time, yeah. And then they got relegated to League Two. He wore them, and he's like, I like them. He put me in contact with them, and that's basically all she wrote. Like, it made sense for both of us. That's one in England and for me and what I wanted to do.
Oh, wow. So essentially, yeah, you had somebody who was kind of already in the door with them make the intro for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I tried a variety of different brands to say, hey, I deal with goalkeepers. I work with X amount of clubs. I have our USL2 team, whatever else it may be. I was a college coach for 8 years, so I have some colleges I work with.
Where did you coach at?
I was in South Dakota for 2 years, Northwest Ohio for 2 years, and in Kansas for 4 years. So kind of spread out all over.
The life of what levels?
NAIA and Division III.
Yeah, God bless you guys, man. That, like, I played Division III football at Hanover, and our coaches happen to drive all over the place to talk to some of these snot-nosed 18-year-olds. I mean, it takes a saint to be a recruiter at that level.
Right. Yeah. It was, it's even more interesting when you kind of have a program or a school that may not be in the most, let's say, desirable of locations for some people.
Yes.
You know, I don't care. I'm a small town guy. I can kind of do anything. Cincinnati's big for me. I grew up on a gravel road. I don't mind a small town one stop light, you know, like it's fine for me, but I also don't need a Walmart or, you know, a Chick-fil-A next door so I can go drop money anytime I wanted to. So recruiting and, you know, kind of those undesirable areas is a bit of a challenge at times, but there's, and kind of like what we've done with OVPL, the Ohio Valley Premier League, is there's players that want to play, you know, so it's really, sometimes you've given players opportunities that may have never had opportunities before because you give them a look.
Love it.
Yeah. I mean, and it bleeds, you're right. It bleeds itself over. So it's a great sales pitch for teams to join. But I mean, you've got Cincy SC, you got Kings, you've got Dana Gardens, you've got, I don't even want to say that. I won't even say their name. You want to talk about rivalries, Adam? I won't even say their name, but it starts with a V. And it's a Vikings mentality for, like, the karmic death. Like, if you have the best life, you're going to go to this place. So I won't say their name and give them the honor of that. And then you have – who else do you have in Cincinnati? Who else am I missing in Cincinnati?
Northern Kentucky FC, you know, close enough. Yes. And then
– that's a college student. So that's all the – it was they changed to allow some guys that were post-grad. But those are all like guys that are playing intramural soccer for NKU, Adam. Ah. And you should see these guys. They're not intramural like I was playing intramural basketball. They have this guy with I don't know if he's with the Croatian last name, a Serbian. I don't want to insult him. I don't know, but the guy's freaking dynamite.
Andre, number
seven. He's dynamite.
Yeah. Andre Novakovic. Yeah, he's one of the top goal scorers in the league. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you watch me, you're like, how is this guy not on NKU's active roster? Like, how is he not playing Division I soccer right now? So that's –
then Cincinnati Swerve as well. They'll be playing this summer, Cincinnati Swerve. So that's – what is that, six or seven teams just in Cincinnati alone, greater Cincinnati?
Yeah.
You know, and to think about that, and this is what I've, you know, really talked with different communities and clubs about, like, for the last 20, 30, 40 years – there's really only been one team in Cincinnati for above 18 years old. that wants to represent their community, the region, whatever. There's only been one team in the last essentially 30, 40 years.
Now you got a league of it.
So it, like how there hasn't been an extremely competitive league it was disappointing to me when I moved to Cincinnati, to be honest, because I was like, this is a massive soccer area. We should have players being able to play, period.
Well, you have a minor league soccer team that was outdrawing the Reds consistently on Fridays and Saturdays. And then they become an MLS team. Like at that point, you should think, okay, these guys were in existence for 3 years. Cincinnati is a mid to small market city, and they're able to pull an MLS franchise because so many people are going to soccer games. Somebody's paying for those tickets, and they're all going to be right in that sweet spot of like 24 to, 38, 40 years old. A lot of the guys, the season ticket holders will be older. Why isn't there a league that represents these guys that can still be competitive? And I think you like got that sweet spot.
I don't even want to begin to count how many high schools exist in Cincinnati, greater Cincinnati, right? Like I know I did some counting. The Northern Kentucky has a high school soccer coaches, kind of association that just for Northern Kentucky schools. I think I counted one time there's about 20 schools that are considered Northern Kentucky in that group.
Yeah, but there's only really one. There's only really one good soccer school in there, and that's Highlands. We all know that.
But like, how do you have all of those schools? And there's players that's going to play through high school, and then they're going to have no place to play. I mean, you're going to have a few go to local schools. You'll have a few potentially branch out and go elsewhere. But other than that, they're all done. And you guys know, I mean, we grew up in various parts of the country probably. And what do we hear growing up? You got to represent, be true to your school, be proud of your community, live healthy lifestyles, be active. But once you graduate high school, that all goes away. And really growing up, we hear that, but you only get to represent your community for 4 years while you're in high school. Right. That shouldn't be the case.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree. I think that what you're doing with soccer is what Devereaux's League was trying to do with basketball, and that was, provide a top-notch, top competitive level league for guys that are ready to rock and roll. But they bloomed a little bit late, or they didn't have the grades, or whatever it was. They just didn't get into the college they wanted to get into.
Yeah, well.
And now you're, I mean, my son is case in point. His friend from his team this summer, who's now at Shawnee State, case in point, he was at UC and then the AD there. And I'm a Brandon family friend. So that AD at UC is a chump. I will say that right now. I the way he's making John look, John's probably the most stand up person on earth, the head basketball coach. So I'm going to say this so everybody knows my prejudice, because I can't stand the guy, the AD. But he just canceled the soccer program on these kids.
Yeah.
So you have Bobo's from Africa. Like, what's he going to do? Like, go back home? No. Like, so your program put him on a team and gave him the opportunity so that he was able to get recruited. And now he's at Shawnee State. So now he's at a place where he's getting athletic money. He can still continue to play, get his education. Wins like that are what super important.
Yeah. And then he has an opportunity to continue playing when he's not in season, which always needs to exist as well. Like, and that, I mean, as a college coach, former college coach, like our athletes cannot excel at their age group and the level by only playing 18 games in a calendar year. They have to play more. And there needs to be those opportunities to play more. And that's exactly the audience that we want. I mean, and we need, because I mean, right now the numbers aren't great for soccer at times. You know, we're losing about 100,000 kids in soccer a year from several big studies. and how can we impact that from the top? I've been involved in adult soccer basically since I graduated high school, you know, like in college and all that stuff. So maybe if we impact the adults post high school, that they'll be able to keep their kids involved or get their kids involved. They stay involved more. So maybe that number that doesn't drop, we can start increasing numbers in soccer again.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
What, so for people that are listening right now, since you're doing, in terms of, you know, extending careers for people, you're kind of doing God's work here, like, you know, like John the Baptist out in the out in the wilderness. What could like our listeners do? Are you looking for sponsorships, or do you need sponsorships? Are you working with them, or is it like kind of
we'd love sponsors. I mean, we just want to continue to provide good opportunities for players and clubs and communities, whatever that may be, and however we can do that. I mean, one of my goals is really to, like we mentioned here earlier, we want every community to be able to have a team. So, you know, one of the easiest things to do for a listener is to start a team, get some people together and figure out what it takes to start a team. And we help you. Like we have, if you want a kit, you know, like you want your team outfitted, we can set you up with that. You know, you want to stream your games, we can set you up. We know how to do that. You need some help with social media, you need some help with a website, we can help with all of that. You know, in the end, what we also want to do is we want to help our clubs. So one of the things that we can help our clubs is, hey, let's put some prize money on this. You know, like, let's throw some money back for the winning teams.
Adam, check this out. So in the fall, it was kind of like a trial run. It was like their beta project. They had the winner qualify for the U.S. Open Cup, which is the big open. So you go a couple levels, and then you'll play USL one team. And if you win like that game, you get to play potentially against an MLS team. So King's Hammer won that last year. They beat Claremont County in the finals. You had like 8 Division I soccer players on the field at the time for it split between the two teams. And the leading goal scorer for Kings is ridiculous. So I was watching I've been keeping up with NKU's soccer team since then. And I think him, and then the leading goal scorer for Elijah's team, who was the other team in the finals, that Claremont team, I think between the two of them for NKU, they've accounted for like 80% of their goals between the two of them. Yep. One is just the other system. I mean, you should see this kid play. What's his first name? The curly haired kid?
Oh, Sam Robinson.
Yeah, Sam Robinson. Like,
yeah, legit. He scored 16 goals in 10 games. I think he played all 10, but he scored 16 goals in 10 games.
And it wasn't chump competition. A kid's that good.
Yeah, he had a great time. I mean, and you know, like, this is just something that it just excites me, because we see some fruits of what all these great clubs are doing and providing these opportunities. Northern Kentucky's University, they missed the conference tournament for the last 3 or 4 years for the Horizon League. And, you know, unfortunately, due to the pandemic, the whole fall was canceled for Division I, Division II, Division III. And what they were able to do, because this happened and the league was still here, we said, let's play. And we had 5 teams play, and we had 200 athletes and for all 5 teams, and 13 NKU players from the fall were able to play in the league, and 6 of them were starters on this spring's team, and they won the Horizon League this year. They had missed the conference tournament for the last 4, 5, 6 years, and they won the Horizon League this year. They were the only Division I team in the Horizon League, probably with their players playing all fall.
Yeah, and it was really cool because a lot of those kids, I don't know the exact amount, but I know from the Claremont team, there was so Dylan's from South Africa.
Yep.
Moyes didn't come back.
Nope.
But
he had a graduate year. He transferred to Southern Illinois, Edwardsville.
Is that where he went?
Yep.
So, but I mean, you provided for international students a place to play too, instead of just going back and getting back with their club team or whatever. They were able to stick around and, you know, attend their classes online, which is, you know, it is what it is. I will keep my mouth shut. But the fact is that they were able to stay here, stay active with soccer, not have to go back to that, you know, wherever they were living. And, you know, in my opinion, it was fantastic soccer to watch in the fall. Like, I know nothing about soccer really because I'm a football jock, but what I watched was super athleticism. It was incredible. I enjoyed every game I got to watch Elijah play last year.
And you know, the other thing about it, while it was good soccer and it was a lot of fun with that, and it was competition. What I saw out of it, because there were 25 games in the fall total across all five teams. I was at 24 of them, and players had joy back in their lives because they had soccer taken from them and life taken from them, essentially from the shutdown of everything. Mm-hmm. Then they had no idea what their future was going to give them. And they finally got to be back on a field with their friends. And this is, again, the community aspect of it. They were in a community of a team, and you just saw some joy and relief in their faces.
Mm. Yeah, makes sense. A lot of people want to get back to normal, and they haven't been able to do the things that they love to do for so long. And I think that's going to be true of a lot of things. I think you hear talk that this is going to be kind of like the Roaring Twenties. Everybody's, you know, going to start coming back out. There's going to be parties again. There's going to be events. There's going to be all this stuff. And it's just people. I don't know if it'll be that big of a transition. I don't think it'll just be sudden like that. I think it's slowly happening. I think people are just getting back to their normal lives. And, you know, I think 40% of the country's vaccinated, I think, at this point. So, you know, I think you're going to start seeing people like wanting to get back out into, you know, competitive sports, you know, and how do people that are, you know, wanting to, you know, do a side hustle in something that they love, you know, how do they get started in something like this? I mean, it sounds like you found something that you were passionate about and you were able to turn that into something that makes you happy. And it's only gonna get bigger and bigger. I mean, is this something that's making you a living?
No. I just enjoy it. You know, like would I want to make a living? Absolutely. I want to create. You know, essentially what the rest of the world doesn't, they have, and we don't. We need players playing more and longer, and competing and training at high levels. I mean, think about the normal 14 to 22-year-old, 23-year-old in the United States. They're playing organized leagues from high school to college where they only play – in Ohio, it's 16 games for high school. You have a 16-game regular season, you're done. From 14 to 18 years old, you're playing 16 games. Mm. In college, it moves to 18 games for some, and it could be 20 for other divisions. Like, you're in the prime, some of the prime athletic times of your career, and you're playing 14, 16, 18 games out of a 52-week year.
Mm.
I mean, it's terrible. Whereas you look abroad, I mean, there's no way Messi would have become Messi by playing 16 games when he was 16 years old.
No, it's a culture. It's a lifestyle in most places outside of the United States.
Well, they also have the leagues that are there to play in. We don't. For whatever reason, the powers that be haven't created this alternative, let's call it an alternative league, that exists outside of the interscholastic and intercollegiate realm. I love the ties of high school sports. I like the ties of college sports, but those aren't for everybody. And we all know that athlete or athletes that were great high school athletes that weren't academics.
Yeah, I got two of them.
And they're not cut out. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with not being in academia. I wasn't. I spent way too long in college and got some degrees, but I hated the school part of it.
Mm.
And we should have opportunities to say, I want to continue playing soccer, but I like construction, or I like electrical work, or I'm a plumber, or I'm a factory worker, but I can still play my sport. That should exist.
If you ever listen to but read about the history of Major League Baseball, because I'm an absolute dork. So the history of baseball has always fascinated me. And in the 10s, 20s, and 30s, before Branch Rickey really did the whole minor league system, it was guys that were working in the steel mills, and they would play on Saturdays and Sundays, and a scout would come and they would watch them. And that was what it was.
Yep.
It wasn't a system of IMG sports where you go and you spend 11 months out of the year at their academy and they have coaches and stuff. Not everybody can do that. You're right. So I think that what you're offering is tremendous. I mean, you guys had, I don't know, in this fall season, you guys had guys from FC Cincinnati there because I was talking to them. And I thought, I was like, oh, I can't believe there's actually scouts from FC Cincinnati at these games. Like, this is pretty, I mean, just because I don't know much about like the skill level that was there. I just knew it was good. But I thought it was awesome that there were actual, like, the local professional team is doing a grassroots approach to scouting guys in this league. And the only reason he's here is because this league exists. If the league wasn't here, these guys would be lost. I thought it was cool.
Soccer was the same way as what baseball was. It's arguably one of the most historic amateur teams.
Oh, I think your phone. Are you far away from the microphone or something?
Are you there now?
Yeah, I got you now.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah. One of the most historic soccer teams in the U.S. historically, you know, like, was the Bethlehem Steel. Bethlehem Steel operated for like 30 years, and they were steel workers. And they won the U.S. Open Cup for several years. I think they have more titles than any other team in the history of the U.S. Open Cup.
Wow.
And they were steel workers. You know, one of the best youth clubs, youth academies in the world is PSV Eindhoven in the Netherlands. PSV, the P in PSV is Philips, the company, you know, that makes electronic equipment, you know, TVs and whatever. That's what they existed. That's how they started. Like, we should have that here in the States. If you want to have a bank and your bank wants to put a team together, you need a league to play in. We have a league for them to play in.
Well, this is awesome. I mean, I think this is cool. This is not just a money-making thing. This is something that you've grown just out of your love for the sport. I mean, that's a side hustle too. Not every side hustle is like something you just go out because you're trying to make money at it. This is a side hustle that you created because you loved the sport. You saw there was an opportunity. You saw there was, you know, an issue that you could help out with. And, you know, the result of doing something that you love that you weren't necessarily making money at is now you've been given this opportunity to sell this product, these gloves, in the U.S. So it turned into something that's profitable potentially. I mean, I'm hoping that it's profitable, right?
I mean, I honestly, with all the gloves, I haven't paid myself one dime.
Oh, wow.
I take it and I turn it right back into inventory because I want to make sure if somebody wants a pair of gloves, they have a pair of gloves. And when I started, because I just felt like there was something else I could do, we had a little contest in February, and we have a benefit glove that we've released. The Tumani, it was created by a refugee organization out of Lexington, Kentucky, and they won the design contest. And 100% of the profits will go back to that nonprofit.
Interesting. So what do you do? What do you do for money? Sounds like you got a lot going on, but it's essentially good faith type stuff. But
yeah, some of it is. I mean, the USL too, you know, my soccer operations job with King's Hammer is my primary role. That's my primary job.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And how's that working out?
It's been a hectic 2 months that we've been doing it. We were a little behind because everything happened so late. Of course, the pandemic puts a lot of questions out there as well. I think we're going to have a good team. I mean, it's fun so far. We're getting everybody going. We got all the paperwork going. We'll play this summer at Xavier University. You know, working with Paul's the best coach in the city, especially with this age group, this young adult age group.
Adam, nobody can who Paul is?
Paul Nicholson.
No, I was asking Adam.
No.
Okay, so Paul used to play for FC Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was a center back, right?
Yeah, a little bit. He played a little center mid as well, defensive center mid. So Paul was actually he's English. He kind of fell out, didn't get a pro contract when he was there, and he came. He played NAI ball at University of Rio Grande in southeastern Ohio. Spent 2 years, like he was the only NAI guy invited to the MLS combine after his senior year, and he wasn't ready for it, you know, like because he thought his career was done. He spent 2 years coaching and also playing, and it was called PDL, which is now the USL2. He spent 2 years playing in it before he got his first pro contract. So he was, you know, 23, 24 years old. And he signed his first pro contract after playing in amateur soccer for 2 more years. And he was at Wilmington Hammerheads for, I think, 4 or 5 seasons. And then he got signed. He was one of the first 11 signings for FC Cincinnati. He spent 3 years in Cincinnati. And maybe, yeah, I think it was 3 years. And then he decided to hang them up, and he got into coaching right after that.
So Elijah's whole life, he's been everything but a striker. And they played in the championship game. Dylan wasn't there, so Elijah had to play striker. And that's who he gets to play against. He's being marked. So he hasn't played striker since he was probably like 8 years old, and he's getting marked by a professional fucking center back. It was. And Paul's not a small guy by any stretch of the imagination. He's not the tallest guy, but he's a thick dude. And it was I said, how'd that go, Elijah? He said, I don't know who that guy was, but he was really strong. I said, yeah, he played for FC Cincinnati for a few years.
See, the other thing, I mean, the league provided opportunities for, I mean, we have 16-year-olds playing. We have a 43-year-old playing as the oldest. It's the only place in this region, this Ohio Valley region, where you can be 16 years old playing against men, pushing you, making you better, making you smarter, making you more physical. And that's what we need. I mean, you know, like bigger picture of things, we need to push the development of the American athlete, especially soccer player, a lot harder so they can be better players sooner. Again, going back to who we all know those players that were absolutely lights out players at 16, 17 years old, maybe. And then maybe they go to college and they fizzle out because they can't make that adjustment to being the best player on their team to being just another player on the team. And if we hit them at 16 years old, that says you're not the best player out there, these guys can help you be better. That's what they need.
I completely agree. You see it all the time.
I mean, Rucker Park, you know, like that's the whole thing about Rucker Park. Like if you can play, you play, right? Like skill, talent, ability doesn't necessarily have an age to it.
I'm going to do the Rogan thing again. I'm going to drop Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu into a podcast.
Do it.
But I'm telling you, there's nothing more humbling and more like drawing you back to the basics than getting your ass absolutely beat on the mat and looking at the guy across from you and thinking, I can't beat them up. I can't rationalize beating them up. I can't. Well, I like, you can think about it, but in reality, it's just not going to happen. The guy's better than you. And I think that a lot of kids, if they had that, if they had that little feeling of being overpowered and completely manhandled a little bit in a safe way, in an environment like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, where you just tap out if it's too bad, it does a world of good for your psyche. Like, it just, your ego just decreases tenfold, because you're like, all right, my shit stinks. Okay, I get it. I'm not as powerful as I thought I was. And I'm just going to throw that out there, guys. I feel like if we're going to do cross training, it needs to be done in an area where you get your ass kicked, and you're going to realize that I'm not quite as badass as I thought I was.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a wrestling family. So I know that one of my best friend, he was a state qualifier in Ohio in wrestling when we were in high school. And the thing about high school or wrestling is there's no age divisions in high school. You know, like, you go against, you could be the 190, whatever the weight classes are these days, 197 pound freshman going up against 197 pound senior. Wow. You know, you go against each other. That's all there is to it. But yet here with other sports, especially soccer, he's not ready yet. She's not ready yet. They're only freshmen, or they're only 16, or they're only 17. So they got to stay with their U17 team, or stay with their U16 team, or stay with this, whatever. No. Like, if that player can play, let them play and push them harder.
Makes sense. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, if it's not going to beat you up and make you feel like a loser, and you can actually take something from it, like, you can, you know, you can learn from the experience, you'll get better. Because when you do play someone, but, you know, kids grow up, and by the time they get done playing, you know, or they're playing against competition on their level, they may actually be way better because they're used to playing people that are bigger than them, faster than them, stronger than them. And then all of a sudden you got similar competition, similar size kids, all that other stuff. And you're like, wow, this is easy. I'm going to destroy these people.
Well, that's a big part of why, like, Newport Catholic, when it comes to basketball, they're so good, because normally the kids on the team are like the fifth, sixth, seventh kid out of that family. And they've spent their whole life in a gym, and when they're not in the gym watching their brothers and sisters play, they're getting beat up on the side. And if it's like the new calf families, you know, you can't cry. You don't cry back to dad. You just got to keep playing. And when they get to high school, a high school with 350 kids can take on a high school with 2,000 kids. Because all of those guys have, like, they've just absorbed it. They've lived it. It's been their whole entire life.
Yep. Yep. I mean, I had a club coach reach out to me and basically said, you know, my guys, they're used to playing against men now. And it's taught them a thing or two. We went to this other showcase, and we played against these other, you know, like age group, you know, brackets, U19s or whatever it might've been. And they said, these guys are soft. They can't, I mean, that wouldn't even been a foul in the OVPL. And you know, they're whining about this and that, saying, it was too hard. We need to go easy on them. Like, nah, I mean, this is, you know, like, it was all clean. It's all clean. It's just the physicality is much different in how people use their bodies.
It's not all clean. Talking to you guys with the V in your name. I'm talking to you. Just joking. It's fun. They're my Pittsburgh Steelers in this league, Adam.
Yes.
No, but I'm assuming you're talking about King's Hammer bringing up their U19 team to play in the league. And you're right. There's nothing better than for those guys who are extremely talented, have the advantage of being in great shape, because some of the guys, some of the teams in the league, you know, you have best jockeys that aren't quite as fit as they would like to be. And they look good. They look like a team that's, you know, can win the league if they want to win, if they're able to, if they can withhold and withstand some of the punishment. It's I could see where they would think that going against typical 18-year-olds wasn't quite the challenge that it was a few months ago.
Yeah, and they got their teeth kicked in one game. They got beat 6-0. You know, one guy scored 5 goals against them. You know, and during that same game, there's a kid on the other team who's one of the – he's the third youngest player in the league. He just turned 17 in February.
Wow.
Yeah, and he leads the league. He leads the league in assists as well.
For the history buff like me, man, like watching this is, to me, it's awesome because it is like the 1910s, 1920s minor leagues. I feel like you're going to find the next Stan Musial coming out, you know, playing with his dad or his brother's rec team. I mean, and it's not a rec team. It's a, like they take it super serious, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
you're going to get the steel mill team and you get this kid that's going to be like, it's he couldn't afford to play club soccer, and he's going to get with. And I don't think he's going to be an American kid, to be honest. And you're going to find him; he's going to be special, yeah, I mean, and you're going to be able to give him a chance to promote himself.
Yeah, we were very fortunate. I mean, we had our first professional signing come just about a month ago. Jacob Goodall played with King's Hammer in the fall. You know, he graduated from Xavier. He had some opportunities and looks at the pro ranks, but you know, the shutdown obviously canceled everything in 2020. So he was able to get 10 games in the fall, you know, one of the very few players probably across the country at his age group, you know, like just out of college that was able to continue playing competitively. And he got a USL one contract and with Greenville Triumph in South Carolina.
And what is a USL one contract? Like what, if you were to sign, what would that look like? Is that like 35, 40,000 a year?
You know, honestly, I wouldn't even want to try to put a figure on it because the scope of those contracts are so wide, to be honest. Like it could be $200 a month and some others could end up paying, you know, 35, 50,000. It just depends on the club. It depends on, you know, how good you are, right? You know, like how needed you are in the position. You know, honestly, I just don't want to, you know.
No, I get it. No, I know. It paints you into a corner.
Yeah, because it's just so.
I apologize about that.
But no, it's just so broad.
I was just thinking, like you have your like living expenses and everything paid for. Go from there.
Yeah, because there's like any others, right? Like the league operations, the club operations are just so different. You know, some clubs they do provide better housing than other clubs do. You know, some clubs you might have to put. Let's just say, I don't know, like four guys in a two-bedroom apartment, where others you might have your own apartment, you know, like that type of setup. So it's just all over the place, kind of like, you know, let's call it like independent baseball, right? You know, you got the Florence Y'alls, who they kind of stay with host families. But there's other independent ball teams, they might have their own apartments type setup. So it's just kind of wide range of operations.
Interesting. This is eye-opening because where do you get the time to spend like to do all these things and you know that you're passionate about? How did you like, what do you do? Like, I mean, is it, do you lose sleep or what?
Well, I don't sleep much anyway, but like I said, like right, I don't have a hobby. So soccer is my hobby, it's my passion, it's my career. Like everything about it is what I do, you know? So there's just not much else that really truly interests me in terms of what I want to do and what I enjoy doing. I mean, I've had some other things here or there that I try to dabble in. And it's just like, nah, this isn't the same. I got to go do soccer. You know, like when I was leaving college coaching or, you know, trying to relocate back to this region, cause this is where we wanted to be for our family. I thought about leaving soccer altogether, and life was just kind of miserable at that time, you know, because there's nothing else that I really want to do and really enjoy, and I don't want to have a career that I don't enjoy. I mean, I've done it. I work construction.
Welcome to the club.
That's pretty much
been like that's like the motto for the whole entire podcast.
I
couldn't fathom doing the 9-to-5.
Yeah, you know, like I might not make as much money as what somebody else does. I mean, I had a little side hustle, right? I had a little side hustle where the contract paid me about $100 an hour, and I didn't enjoy it. You know, could I kept it full time? Potentially, I think I did a pretty good job at it, but I hated it. I mean, I was absolutely miserable. I was sitting in front of a computer, for 12 to 14 hours plus and doing stuff that had no interest of me.
That's a lot of people. That's most of the people that listen to this podcast. I mean, they don't, you know, there's things that people are out here doing and they don't really enjoy doing them. And I mean, a lot of people listen to this because they're, you know, they want to find the next, you know, potential thing that they could do. You know, majority of our stuff is, you know, we get on here, we talk about real estate, but we really don't talk about a side hustle passion that may not bring in money potentially. I mean, you could flip it into some things maybe, or opportunities may, you know, present themselves that you weren't even thinking about, because people can see you're passionate about something. But if you could start something like you just started, you never know what this is going to turn into down the road. And opportunities may present themselves and, you know, who knows, you know, 50 years from now or something, people may be selling franchises in your league for $1 billion. You never know. I mean, you could be building something right now that people, you know, they just think, oh, this is a fun little rec league type thing. But it could turn into something. And, you know, you're building a brand right now. People can see you're passionate about this, I'm sure.
I have an idea, Brandon. How about you challenge Don Garber to a true, like, three-round fight, and then winner gets the league? And then you could do yours the right way, and as opposed to what Garber's done with his, which was all about, like, I really don't know what he's done. So, like, I prefer you.
There'd be some changes, that's for sure. I think the best thing about it all, really, is people are first. And I think that's something I learned through the years. What I was instilled from growing up. You put people first and do things right for people. Like, it'll all work out. It'll all be great. Will I make a killing off of it, you know, living? I don't care. But in the end, I see that people are happy. They're enjoying it. They're competing. There's a little chippiness to it, because who doesn't enjoy that a little bit, right? Like, there's just so much good coming from the people that are involved. I mean, every club is in the same mentality with it right now of providing for their people. So when we have that, I mean, we're all winners and right now. And we can't thank the clubs enough for jumping in and doing it, because they're putting their people first.
Love it.
Can I make a suggestion? One suggestion?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not for, like, on the field stuff. I'm talking about, I really think you could get out of your league a really good, like, esports type situation. Whether it's just FIFA. I mean, FIFA's not really like a big game for the esports thing, but I think that you could expand your brand through that.
I mean, I'll stay quiet on that one. we have a lot of plans. I'll say that.
Oh, well, never mind. Maybe you have it. Let me know because I'd love to bring investors.
Yeah, I mean, we're all about it. We present a lot of different things to our clubs, that our members. We want to put our clubs and our clubs players and our clubs coaches. We want to push them to the forefront, because they're the ones that need recognition. You know, when somebody scores 5 goals in a game, they should be paraded, you know, essentially. Like, what player doesn't love their name up in lights, right? Like, what coach doesn't love winning, right? Like, who doesn't love hoisting a trophy? You know, like, that's what it's about. How can we promote the club, the player, the community in any different variety of ways? That's what we want to do.
We need a trophy podcast. We need a trophy for the podcast. That's what we should have.
Yeah.
We should have a podcast trophy every year. One of our people get like a, it should be like a wrestling belt.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think a wrestling strap's the best way to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think like, those are the coolest trophies.
I want a trophy. I want everybody. I want to hand out a trophy every year to one of our podcasts. I mean, you got 52 of them. You know, we're posting these things every week. Like, we should have a trophy, a belt. That'd be sweet with like a little microphone like, on it or, yeah.
This is so outside the box. Like, a lot of people are going to listen to this and be like, what the hell is going on now? But it's awesome.
You know, I guess I should say, like, it. People have recognized, and we really, really appreciate the recognition from elsewhere that we were able to help North and South Dakota start a league 2 weeks ago.
How far is the travel for that? Because I played college football in Indiana, and I can tell you this: we only traveled 5 times a year, and driving through Indiana in buses is horrible. I could only imagine what it's like in like Pierre to Bismarck.
Yeah, but horrible. You know what? You know what though? Because I lived out there for 2 years, they're used to it. You know, like travel for them is nothing. They'll travel 8 hours sometimes for just a regular high school game. Just because they're used to it. And that's what they do. So we actually have, right now we have 4 teams in North and South Dakota that could and will be the first ever representatives from those 2 states in the U.S. Open Cup ever.
I mean, your connections are pretty tight then for you to be able to get all these different teams, these different leagues that have representatives in the U.S. Open Cup.
Well, I mean, honestly,
I think you're understating like your role in all this. I feel that.
Well, all I want to do is like part of what has been fun about it is kind of just exploiting rules to some extent. Like there's rules out there that people don't understand and don't read.
And you're the CPA. You're the CPA of amateur soccer. I love it.
So all you have to do really is help people understand rules and how it's not limiting them. And it actually help them open doors to what they want, or kind of like the whole Steve Jobs type of deal, give people something that they don't know they want. So when you say, hey, this exists for you, that light flips on and they're like, that's amazing.
This is a totally different podcast than we've ever had, because all of our guys have been really capitalistic and how can we maximize our efforts and maximize our profits? And you, who I feel is like one of our most intelligent guests, because like the whole Steve Jobs, no, I mean, seriously, like, but you're doing it not from like, I need to make money perspective, but I like this. So this is what I want to do perspective. It's really eye-opening. I really enjoy listening to someone who is passionate. And it's not the side hustle is not just about dollar bills, but it's about fulfillment. And, you know, side hustles are about fulfillment and people are fulfilled in different ways. And I really like the fact that you've brought another angle for people to look at it from.
I appreciate that. I mean, it's just, you know, I guess part of it probably stems from I wish I had more opportunities when I was growing up. You know, I didn't know about the whole PDL USL2 level. I had no clue. I wish I got started into coaching earlier. I didn't know, or I mean, you don't know what you don't know kind of mentality, right? I didn't know what I could do earlier. And, you know, when my career finished, you know, after I graduated from college, I hated not playing anymore, even though I didn't care necessarily to play extremely competitive. But if a league like this existed, you guarantee it, I would have been trying to help out, play, jump in the goal, do whatever I could to play with the team and to be a part of a community. I mean, we've been, you know, had communications with, let's just say club, like a Cincy SC. They're doing a lot for their club. That's their community. But some of the other conversations we've had is we have 20,000 refugees in Cincinnati. And these refugees have no place to play soccer. Do you know what we're trying to do? How can we provide them a place to play soccer? And that's their community. That's what they identify as. They might live in all these different neighborhoods of Cincinnati, but they're going to come together and hopefully we get it together where they have a refugee team that represents that community. They might be from the West Side or, you know, Northern Kentucky or wherever, but they represent this refugee community.
Who's your Lexington team?
Lexington Landsharks. And they actually are a very big refugee community there as well. And
I was wondering that because, Adam, the league is awesome. There's like, I don't know, 12 different languages that I've heard so far on the field, just like watching. Wow. These guys were talking to each other and I'm listening to it, but it's like, okay, that's not French. It's not English, obviously. Like, I don't know, but they were all speaking it together. And they have some like skilled players. You could tell that they didn't have like the technical aspect of it because they hadn't been coached it, but it wasn't because not tactical, I should say, not technical, but it wasn't their fault or anything like that. It was just that they hadn't coached, but their technique, their moves, their speed is really fun to watch. I enjoyed watching the Lexington team. They were like, those guys were just happy to be playing, and they had some skilled ass players. They just got to get it all together in terms of playing a full 90 minutes.
Well, you know, the other thing, and to be fair to them, that game where they lost to CincSC, that was the first time that they've been able to get together because Fayette County in Kentucky has been shut down more than any other outside of whatever Louisville's county is. Yeah, so they have
that's because of Andy.
Yeah, they've had no training, no nothing. So they were just able to basically just show up and play a game for the first time in a year.
Yeah, and my boy Ethan got hurt that game. The goalie.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
He and Elijah were friends they were on the same club team for a couple of years, and then Ethan moved to Red. But they've always been friends, and it's like that was another cool part was to see, hey, oh, there's Ethan in goal. Well, there's Joey Archer. He's on CincSC now, and with Elijah's moving over there. Like that was the cool part for me as a dad was to see all these different players that you watch your kids grow up playing with and against get a chance to play at a very high level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's going to continue. I mean, Lexington's going to have some players still adding some more players. And there's some names coming that can play.
Yeah, the Lexington FC team, that club has been one of the top two teams in Kentucky forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, KHA, but with KHA, you always have to worry about is it an Ohio team or is it a Kentucky team? And then you have Javanon. Javanon's the other group. Like, so I'm interested in seeing who you're going to bring from there.
It's going to be cool. Like there's a lot. I mean, going back to the Open Cup and what is being presented. I mean, Lexington, the Landsharks there, they'll be the first team from Lexington to ever play in the U.S. Open Cup as well. I mean, the U.S. Open Cup's probably, it's probably close to 110 years old in competitions. And not one team from Lexington has ever played in an Open Cup.
That was dead air there, but I don't understand why.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
I don't understand why like Lexington didn't have anybody else ever playing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean,
with all the horse parks that have been there.
Yep.
And how it's always fed into like immigrant employment, like you would think that it would always have a solid soccer base.
Yeah. So we have, so Lexington's never had one. Evansville, Indiana's never had one, represented in the U.S. Open Cup. Wheeling, West Virginia.
Evansville, I get.
But I don't.
I've been in Evansville a few times. The Purples are Porter, my boy Porter Hedenberg's there now from Highlands High School. But like that's different than Lexington. Lexington's got like it's just like the center of the state, like
right.
I don't know. Evansville just to me looks like is mostly like a basketball kind of area.
But Evansville's had a great history of soccer with the Purple Aces. They've sent some guys into England. Scottish national teamer David Weir. Like, you know, I'm not a Hoosier by any means, but there's more than just Indianapolis, right? For Indiana. Like they, yeah. Like when people say, oh, you know, Indiana, well, people just think Indianapolis. Well, Evansville's there, you know, Fort Wayne's around as well. South Bend, you know, there's some areas that will produce soccer, but for whatever reason, whoever it is, they like in these other leagues or, you know, leadership, they focus on Indianapolis. They don't give these other places an opportunity to battle for their community.
I'm excited to see like that. That's part, like as a civics and just history geek, that's part I'm excited to see is like, how do these cities that I've always thought are too small to support this or that, how does it grow? Like, how do these franchises grow within those municipalities?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Wheeling, West Virginia will hopefully be the first representative from the area and maybe the second one ever from West Virginia to play in the U.S. Open Cup.
I think it's awesome. I think what you're doing is completely awesome.
Appreciate Adam, that. But, you know,
Adam, are you a soccer fan yet?
I'm getting there, I guess. I was turned off by soccer because I played one season for North Avondale and we never won a game, and my poor brother's team never even scored a goal. So that was the end of it. And I was always a baseball guy because, you know, growing up on the West Side in the 80s and 90s, everything was baseball. Like, everybody played baseball because you're, you know, in the 80s, you were coming off of the whole, you know, Big Red Machine, Pete Rose, you know, all that stuff. And you had so many people from my neighborhood that were, you know, famous baseball players. I mean, Pete Rose, Dave Parker, Carl Tuffy Rhodes, he could have won the home run comp, or he could have broke the home run record in Japan, but the Japanese walked him about halfway through the season, pretty much every at bat the rest of the season, so he couldn't break the record, which was kind of racist, but yeah, you know, Don Zimmer from West High. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's crazy. Ron Oster. Oh. I think Ron Oster is from, he went to West High, I think, maybe.
Yep.
But yeah, man, I mean, you got, it's crazy the number of ball players that, you know, and, you know, they grew up on the West Side. I mean, then, you know, the East Side's got Barry Larkin and Ken Griffey Jr. obviously. So, but yeah, I mean, we had our fair share.
Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah. Now it's soccer. Now everybody's playing soccer, which is cool, I guess. I mean, man, anything that gets these kids out and gets them moving, you know?
Yeah, that's so, exactly right.
So, Brandon, I got Adam out to a game 2019 for Highlands versus Ballard from Louisville.
Yeah.
And it was so Highlands at the time was, I don't know, 11th or something in state. Ballard was fourth. And he got to enjoy what high school soccer is in Kentucky. And it's not that much far behind Ohio. Because the boys, the boys scrimmage Moeller when they're in high school, and the Moeller scrimmage wasn't a scrimmage; it was a game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They didn't play Ignatius, but they played St. Xavier from Louisville, who had tied Ignatius. So it was it's not that far. I'm just telling you, Adam, the sport is in this area is going to be soccer.
Well, I mean, that's why we got they gave us a MLS team because of how popular soccer was here. I mean. You know, when we were a minor league team, look how many people were coming to the matches. It was crazy. I mean, I went to some of them. Yeah. There were over 36,000 people there when we played Crystal Palace. You remember that?
And it was scary walking on the that's the one bad thing about Nipper was it was pretty scary walking around the horseshoe. We were like, we may suffocate because nobody knows what lane, who's supposed to be on the left, who's supposed to be on the right. Nobody knows. Yeah, that new stadium looks sweet as hell too, and they did that right way better than Great American, way better than Paul Brown. It's the future. It's the future, whether people want to accept it or not. It is.
Yeah, yeah, that's wild, man. Well, anyway, we've been just chatting away, and now we're an hour and a half into this thing almost. So we try to keep all these to an hour. What would you leave all of our podcast listeners with? What do you want to tell them about their passion and you know, turning that into a side hustle potentially?
Yeah, like start. I mean, that's start it. Find somebody that might be able to help you along the way, because it's so hard to do it by yourself, right? Like, I couldn't have done this by myself. It took, you know, me and Jason, and then getting some more people that, you know, that would be interested. Like it's so, so hard, whether it's a sponsor, whether it's, you know, some sort of funding outlet. You never know what you're capable of, and you don't know what could end up being what everybody else needs and wants. For me, I want to do what I want to do, and I want to do what I'm passionate about, and it drives me. You know, for others, that's money. Others, that's family time or a car or a house or whatever. Find out whatever that may be and chase it, pursue it, you know, dive in 100%. You just never know what could end up happening from it.
Awesome. Awesome. What do you got, Kyle? Anything?
Yeah.
You want to tell us more about how soccer is going to be the greatest sport ever in Cincinnati?
It's just going to be. Sorry. I played football through college. I played American football through college. It's the way it is. No, Brandon, tell everybody how they can sponsor a league, what they can do to help get it growing. I mean, it's already 20 teams in. Like, they could legitimately be huge.
Yeah, so hopefully it is.
How can these listeners do for you?
So they can find us on all social media. It's at OVPL Soccer. That's the Ohio Valley Premier League. OVPL Soccer, at OVPL Soccer. Email us at info@OVPLsoccer.com. Website's OVPLsoccer.com. All the club contacts are there as well. So if there's somebody you want to sponsor, you know, like Dana Gardens is one of our teams in the league. It's sponsored by Dana Gardens, the bar for Xavier University. You know, like, these teams are providing good things for people, for young players. They want to help young players. They want your help to provide more for their young players and create that culture, create a community, and continue to provide a platform for the region and wherever else we may end up landing. Because we've been in communication with several different areas about starting other leagues as well and helping them, because they see the need and they want the need. So we'd love to chat about more opportunities. And, you know, sometimes there's other stuff we need our eyes opened up to, you know, what can we do better? And we're always open for that.
Mm.
I think if you get a production company with highlight videos, I think it'd be really cool, to be honest with you, on YouTube. And then, Adam, it's the hashtag grow the game. That's the big hashtag for the,
what is it?
Grow the game.
Hashtag what?
Hashtag grow the game.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, it sounds like they don't need any help.
There's always players that need a place.
I love it, guys.
Yeah. You know, speaking of the video, that's something that's on my radar to increase. You know, one of the biggest needs that I have personally for it is we need a good mobile hotspot where we can stream games from, because there's venues that don't have internet access and we want to stream games.
That's interesting. I mean, you could probably get something on like a Verizon or something like that has hotspots and everything. Nope. They don't?
Nope, not good enough.
Wow. That's wild.
Yep.
Is it because of like where the games are played? They're more rural and things like that sometimes?
Well, okay, I'll say this. The way that we want to do it right, they're not good enough. Could we just hook up the hotspot and just have a video? Yes. But we want a production out of it. We want commentary. We want play-by-play. We want a scoreboard on the stream. We want the clock on the stream. And they're just not capable to handle that much bandwidth.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, you almost need like a satellite van or something.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah.
And that's probably not cheap. Well, if we got any super wealthy people that love soccer that want to, you know, sponsor a van, I mean, you know, $250,000, $300,000 or something, that might do it.
Or if they know, I mean, that's not my realm, right? I have no technical background like that, you know, technology background. Like, if somebody knows that, I mean, I'm all ears and helping how to make that possible.
That's awesome. That's the next step. you know, people that can't make it to the game, stream them. People like these. Yeah. I mean, you got people out there that are playing for passion. They're not playing for a paycheck, really. I mean, they're just out there playing because they want to play.
Yeah, so we had 4 weekends, and this all came from last summer. Of course, everything was shut down, but things started opening up late July, early August. We put together 4 weekends of just friendlies, and we actually were able to stream the friendlies through Facebook. And we had, I can't remember how many games, but we had over 20,000 viewers for friendlies.
Wow. You definitely need a van.
Right.
You need a satellite uplink. You need to get all that stuff together.
Because I tell you what, while it was nice to have the streaming on through Facebook Live, right? It's not what it could have been and what we have planned.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Wow. It's definitely going to grow. I mean, it sounds great. Well, we'll see what happens with the podcast here. Maybe somebody reaches out to you and wants to help and get involved somehow.
That'd be great. I appreciate the opportunity to come in and chat, and nice chat with you guys. And yeah, anything we can do to help, and we're all open arms, open ears to anything that we can help make it better and help grow the game.
Love it, Brandon.
Thanks for coming on, Brandon.
Appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Side Hustle City. Well, you've heard from our guests. Now let's hear from you. Join our community on Facebook, Side Hustle City. It's a group where people share ideas, share their inspirational stories, and motivate each other to be successful and turn their side hustle into their main hustle. We'll see you there, and we'll see you next week on the show. Thank you.